Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 3rd chapter, and we're up to text 23. And I don't see it up on this board, I guess you call it a blackboard, or it's not written up. So I'll just read it, and everybody can follow. But before I do, I'd like to make a public apology for something I said in a previous class, which was a mistake about a few classes ago. At the end of the class, I was asked to say something about my association with Amala Bhakta Babu and Dravida Babu before I joined. So I told about how I used to work for Amala Bhakta at a Hatha Yoga Center in Midtown Manhattan, and I was working with Dravida on we were trying to put together an edition of the Ramayana, and I referred to it as a bootleg edition, which was a mistake because the material that we were working on was non-copyrightable. In other words, it was in the public domain. Everything was completely legit and above board and legal. So I mean, it was an attempt at being humorous, but it was borderline slander. So I apologize for that, and I hope that nobody took that the wrong way and that has not caused any problems for Amala Bhakta. He was just trying to, as he's done over the last 40 years as a member of ISKCON, help people have access to something transcendental, sublime. And that particular attempt was not successful. That piece of literature never got published. But of course, as a member of ISKCON now, he's given us so many of Prabhupada's books in an audio form and also, you know, done nice renditions of different things from Prabhupada's books, even in a written form. So I just wanted to set that straight. Is that okay? Okay, thank you. So, all right, so I guess I'll just start here. Sasam sa pitre tad sarvam bayorupa bilambanam vismita paramapritas tanayam pari sasvaje. Translation. There's going to be a good amount of reading because there's only one very short purport and a lot of translations. So I'll just read the English. I chanted that, but I'll read the English from this point onwards and then just say something at some point. Translation. Thus Sukanya explained how her husband had received the beautiful body of a young man. When the king heard this, he was very surprised, and in great pleasure he embraced his beloved daughter. Chaivana Muni, by his own prowess, enabled King Saryati to perform the Soma Yajna. The Muni offered a full pot of Soma Ras to the Ashwini Kumaras, although they were unfit to drink it. King Indra, being perturbed and angry, wanted to kill Chaivana Muni, and therefore he impetuously took up his thunderbolt. But Chaivana Muni, by his powers, paralyzed Indra's arm that held the thunderbolt. Although the Ashwini Kumaras were only physicians and were therefore excluded from drinking Soma Ras in sacrifices, the demigods agreed to allow them henceforward to drink it. King Saryati begot three sons, named Uttanabarhi, Anartha, and Buddhishena. From Anartha came a son named Revata. O Maharaj Prickett, subduer of enemies, this Revata constructed a kingdom known as Kusastali, in the depths of the ocean. There he lived and ruled such tracts of land as Anartha, etc. He had 100 very nice sons, of whom the eldest was King Kukudmi. Taking his own daughter, Revati, Kukudmi went to Lord Brahma in Brahmaloka, which is transcendental to the three modes of material nature, and inquired about a husband for her. This is one, Prabhupada's very short purport. It says, it appears that Brahmaloka, the abode of Lord Brahma, is also transcendental and above the three modes of material nature, Apavritam. Translation again. When Kukudmi arrived there, Lord Brahma was engaged in hearing musical performances by the Gandharvas and had not a moment to talk with him. Therefore, Kukudmi waited, And at the end of the musical performances, he offered his obeisances to Lord Brahma and thus submitted his long-standing desire. After hearing his words, Lord Brahma, who is most powerful, laughed loudly and said to Kukudni, "O King, all those whom you have decided within the core of your heart to accept as your son-in-law have passed away in the course of time. 27 Chaturyugas have already passed. Thus, those upon whom you may have decided are now gone, and so are their sons, grandsons, and other descendants. You cannot even hear about their names." Purport. During Lord Brahma's day, 14 manas, or 1,000 mahayugas, pass away. Brahma informed King Kukudni that 27 mahayugas, each consisting of the four periods, Satya, Treta, Dwarpa, and Kali, had already passed. All the kings and other great personalities born in those yugas have now departed from memory into obscurity. This is the way of time as it moves through past, present, and future. And there's just a few more translations, and actually two or three, and then we'll end the chapter. Translation again. O King, leave here and offer your daughter to Lord Baladev, who is still present. He is most powerful. Indeed, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose plenary portion is Lord Vishnu. Your daughter is fit to be given to him in charity. Lord Baladev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who hears and chants about him is purified, because he is always the well-wisher of all living entities. He has descended with all his paraphernalia to purify the entire world and lessen its burden. Having received this order from Lord Brahma, Kukudni offered obeisances unto him and returned to his own residence. He then saw that his residence was vacant, having been abandoned by his brothers and other relatives, who were living in all directions because of fear of such higher living beings as the Yakshas. Thereafter, the king gave his most beautiful daughter in charity to the supremely powerful Baladev, and then retired from worldly life and went to Badarik Ashram to please Nara Narayan. Om Aginata Mananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadanti Kam. So when I was preparing the class, I was thinking to myself, so what is the, what important lesson can we take, from this chapter here? I mean, we're hearing about how an old Muni wanted to get married to a young girl, and there's just different things that happen. But I was thinking, this is Bhagavatam is not entertainment. There's some important lesson here. Anyway, what I thought of, what came back to me, was that actually one really important thing that we can get from this chapter, a lesson, instruction, is the importance of taking shelter of higher authority. Okay? And there's two really good examples of this in this chapter here. The first one is Sukanya, the daughter of, what's his name? Saryati, thank you. Yeah, Sukanya. She took shelter of higher authority, and we could see how she was greatly benefited. She was a young girl. It doesn't state her age. Amala Bhakta said probably about 13, 14. He got that impression. Young girl. And so she obviously was trained up by her mother and her father in certain values. She understood the importance of obeying the father, obeying the mother. She learned from her parents the importance of serving the husband submissively and like that. And she took shelter of those instructions. That's what it means to take shelter of a higher authority, to receive the instructions and place your faith in those instructions and act upon them. And she did that. She did that. When she, first of all, the first instance of that was her honesty. When her father asked, what's going on here? Hey, why is it that all of a sudden all the soldiers can't pass stool or urine? We're obstructed in passing. And, so she could have just kind of kept her mouth shut. But she had been taught, okay, no, it's important to be honest, it's important. So she volunteered that information. Well, I think I did something wrong. I saw these two glowing objects in the hole there, and I pierced them, and then blood started to come out. Maybe I'm responsible for it. So that was good. You know, so that's the first instance of her taking shelter of higher authority. She had been taught as a child, be honest, you know, be straightforward like that. So she did that. And then the next thing she knows, her father, he kind of realized, you know, he was highly elevated himself. He was the son of Manu, actually, it's mentioned, and he was very expert in the Vedic knowledge. He was giving instruction on how to perform the second day of some sacrifice. So he went to Chaivana Muni and he explained the situation, and Chaivana Muni inquired, well, is she married? Prabhupada actually says that in his purport. It's not actually in the translation, but Prabhupada gives that to us in his purport. And so he could immediately understand that, okay, I'll give my daughter in charity. And you know, it doesn't mention that she didn't make a peep. You know, she just, okay, my father's offering me in charity to this Muni. Okay. Despite the fact that he was very old, and it's mentioned that he was, you know, he was all wrinkled and his skin was sagging and like that. But she's okay. So what's the second thing? She took shelter of the higher authority. She was obedient to her father. And then it's also mentioned that when she was living with Chaivana Muni, it's mentioned that he was cranky. He was irritable. You know, he had that irritable or cranky disposition. So that would have been a challenge too. But, you know, she served him. She did the right thing. Again, she didn't, you know, she wasn't indifferent or moody. She served him very nicely. So she, you know, third instance of her taking shelter of higher authority. And then also, the fourth instance would be when Chaivana Muni, it doesn't really clearly mention what his motive was in accepting this young girl as his wife. We can't necessarily assume that it was just total lust. I mean, maybe he needed some assistance or whatever. But in any event, we also don't know his motive why when the Ashwini Kumara showed up, he requested them to go into the lake, you know, to restore his youth, to make him look young again. It could have been something other than he just wanted to enjoy this beautiful young girl. It could have been that he was feeling appreciation for her humble, submissive service attitude. You know, here's this young girl, I'm this old man, and she's coming forward and she's serving me so nicely, and I'm cranky and she's tolerating everything. And I should please her. You know, I'll do this. I'll transform, get myself transformed into a young person so she doesn't feel, you know, she could feel happy about, you know, being married to me. So anyway, when he went into the lake and he came out, she couldn't, you know, we all know the story. We heard it from a half dozen different times now, but she couldn't distinguish who was her husband, who was Chaivana Muni. So she said, whichever of you, there's three of them that came, whichever you of the Ashwini Kumaras, please let me know which one of you is my husband. So once again, she took shelter of the higher authority, you know. She didn't try to speculate or, you know, she was just very humble and submissive, and she was told and then she accepted that. And when her father came and, you know, saw that she was with this young man, and he was very young and beautiful, and he accused her of doing something wrong. She didn't even have like a moment's anxiety, you know. She was very clean. She was a very intelligent person, and she was very obviously very pure-hearted, because it doesn't mention she had any anxiety at all. She just, matter of fact, says she smiled. She was confident. You know, she was totally confident. I've done the right thing. I have nothing to be worried about. I have nothing to feel guilty about. I have nothing to be worried about. Right along, I've done the right thing. I've done the right thing as far as this goes. You know, the Ashwini Kumaras told me, this is my husband. This is my husband. So she explained it to her husband, to her father, and he accepted it right away. Of course, he was very happy. He embraced her. So, you know, she's a brilliant example of somebody who benefited by taking shelter of higher authority, you know, having faith in what she was taught and putting it into practice in her life. I mean, just think about it. She came there. She was already fortunate. I mean, she's the daughter of King Saryati, who's the son of Manu. So, you know, she's got pretty good karma to start off with there. But at least at the beginning of this, you know, as far as the story goes, she came there a young girl. You know, she's the daughter of King Saryati. But she left, you know, she left that whole situation. The wife of Chaivana Muni, the illustrious Chaivana Muni, the son of Bhrigu Muni, very powerful mystic yogi and sage. And now not only was he, her husband, but he was young and he was good looking and, she really made out like anything, so to speak. So, she really benefited. She took shelter of the higher authority and she was, it was a happy ending, And another example of this further on in the chapter is King Kukudni was, the Saryati, and I think he mentions he had a son, and he was the Revata. Maybe there's one son in between there, between Saryati and Revata. I think there is. I can't remember his name. And then so Kukudni is the oldest son of 100 sons of Revata, and he wanted to get his daughter married. So once again, he didn't just consult an astrologer or, go around scheming how to do it. No, he was thinking, okay, well, Lord Brahma, on the wedding, to this day on wedding invitations, sometimes Lord Brahma's picture is there. He has something to do with marriages and weddings. I'm not sure exactly what the connection is. But so he decided, I'm going to take shelter of Lord Brahma. So once again, taking shelter of the higher authority. And somehow or another, he took his daughter to see Lord Brahma, which, would have been interesting to how he did it, because it's described that he was living in a kingdom within the ocean. I don't know if they were living as superfish but anyway, they were in the ocean there, and somehow or another he was able to take his daughter to visit Lord Brahma. And but when he got there, Lord Brahma was busy. He was listening to some music recital. The Gandharvas were performing some musical performance, and he didn't have a moment to talk to him. So King Kukudni patiently waited, and it's described that during that time, when he finally got to see him, he was informed that 27 Chatur Yugas had already passed, which is about 118 million years. He might have been thinking, oh, I blew it. I made a mistake. Now I came here to get a husband for my daughter, and everything's going to be totally different down there. 118 million years have passed, he's told by Lord Brahma. But was he the loser? No. He took shelter of Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma said, okay, actually, wait, don't. We're just getting the skeletal details here in the chapter, but Lord Brahma assured him, okay, no problem. Just immediately go back down to earth and get your daughter married to Lord Balaram. He's actually, Vishnu Tattva, he's Krishna himself, and, your daughter's suitable. So, once again, he's an example. He took shelter of the higher authority, Lord Brahma, and he benefited so greatly. He got his daughter, he got the best husband for his daughter, Lord Balaram. And also, he himself benefited because, he was a king, so if he did it in a different way, just made some arrangement, well, he might have got some husband for his daughter, and he'd still be stuck there ruling a kingdom, right? But when he got down there and he saw that, wait a second, this everything's totally different. All my family members are gone, long since gone, and everything's different. And he just realized, I'm not going to stick around. He just went to Bhadari Gashram, and it's described that he said he went to Bhadari Gashram to please Naranarayan. So he got his daughter married to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he just took the opportunity to engage himself in pure devotional service. So he was greatly benefited by this, taking shelter of the higher authority. And this is a really, it's how it works. It's a really super important principle in Krishna consciousness, having faith in the instructions of the higher authority, the spiritual master. And that's what it means to take shelter of the higher authority. And, by doing that, we become supremely or greatly benefited. Perhaps the greatest, or certainly a great, if not the greatest, example of that in modern times, in terms of Vaishnav way of thinking and seeing things, is for many, Srila Prabhupada is a great example of that. Prabhupada was instructed by his spiritual master, go to the West, preach this Krishna consciousness in the to the English-speaking people and the English language. It'll be good for you, it'll be good for them. So Prabhupada had faith in that instruction of his spiritual master. And And he kept that faith, and it was difficult. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't, there wasn't some difficulty there, but he kept that faith in the instruction of his spiritual master, and he became, you know, supremely benefited. I mean, he was already supremely benefited. He's already Nietzsche said a pure devotee, but, you know, at least for the purpose of instructing us, the pastime unfolds, is that what happened was, because he had that faith in the instruction of his spiritual master, and he kept that faith, he was rewarded by, he became the very important instrument, you know, for spreading the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. You know, Krishna used him as his instrument to spread Krishna consciousness, starting here in America and then back around the rest of the world. And so Prabhupada was, you know, benedicted in that way. And on top of that, he became famous as the hero. You know, Prabhupada is to the spreading of Krishna consciousness, just like Arjuna was to the Battle of Kurukshetra. There are many heroes in the Battle of Kurukshetra. I mean, Bhishma was a hero, Yudhishthira was a hero, this one, that, you know. But Arjuna, if you're going to have to ask, who's the big hero? Arjuna. You know. So in the same way, it's an analogy that, you know, Prabhupada was like a big hero. Yeah. All the acharyas in the disciplic succession heroes, but Prabhupada's a, you know, really big hero. Of course, he wouldn't have been concerned with that, but that's like a fringe benefit. Big hero in the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement. But this is all coming out as a result of his faith in the instruction of his spiritual master. And, you know, Prabhupada expressed it himself, and I've kind of said it before, but I'll say it again in an excerpt he wrote in a letter to Sudama. In 1972, Prabhupada said, "When I was alone in your New York, I was thinking, who will listen to me in this horrible, sinful place?" Anyway, I'll stay a little bit longer. At least I can distribute a few of my books. That is something. See? So he's expressing, you know, that, okay, wasn't looking very good, but anyway. He basically saying, I have faith. I have this instruction from my spiritual master, so let me persevere. And then he said, but Krishna was all along preparing something I could not see. He brought you young American boys and girls to me one by one for being trained up to do the message, you know, spreading the message of Lord Chaitanya. He said, now I could see it as a miracle. He said, otherwise, in your city of New York, one old man with barely enough money for buying edibles, how could he survive? How could he even survive? What to speak of introducing a God-conscious movement for the benefit or for the saving of all mankind? He says, now I could see it is Krishna's miracle. You see? So that was the result. You know, Prabhupada, and for our benefit, you know, that pastime is there. But it shows that, you know, that's the result of keeping the faith in the instruction of the spiritual master. He kept faith in the instruction of the spiritual master, you know, despite all the difficulties and, you know, incurred in coming here and while being here, and look at the amazing result. So, you know, these things are there for our instruction. You know, as once again, Prabhupada was already a pure devotee, a Nityasiddha. You didn't need to have any kind of experience any of these things for his own purification or anything like that. He's already on the topmost level. But it's there for us. It's, you know, it's there to show us we have to follow in the footsteps of these great personalities like Prabhupada and like the people we're hearing about in this, in the Bhagavatam, and even in this chapter. We have to try to follow in their footsteps and keep faith in the instructions of the spiritual, place our faith in the instructions of the spiritual master and keep our faith there. And then wonderful things will happen. Wonderful things will happen to us individually, you know, in our own lives, in our own development in Krishna consciousness, and even collectively, wonderful things can happen, you know, and, you know, will happen as a result of doing that. But that's the active principle, you know. I think there's some, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita talks about the instruction of the spiritual masters, the active principle in spiritual life. That's the active principle, that decision. That's what sincerity is, actually. Making that decision. Okay, Papa says, do this, let me do it. You know, making that decision to place your faith and keep your faith and following the instruction of the spiritual master. And then, as there was, you know, from that everything comes. You know, there's one letter Prabhupada wrote to Brahmananda. Brahmananda was inquiring about something about Krishna's being kind to us. I don't know exactly what, because his letter's not there in the Veda base, but Prabhupada's response was, regarding Krishna's being kind upon us, should be on the principle that Arjuna followed. Arjuna was Krishna's, you know, good friend, and but Prabhupada, I don't, can't remember it verbatim, but the gist of it says, but you know, Krishna never told Arjuna, just sit down on the chariot, relax, chill out, you know, I'll take care of everything. No, he wanted Arjuna to fight, you know. That was the instruction. And Prabhupada says, so ordinarily we have to try our best to our best capacity to achieve something. And then by Krishna's grace, all of a sudden, we shall see everything is there. That sort of help from Krishna is transcendental happiness. So in other words, that's how it works. It's a transcendental reciprocation. When we make that decision, you know, we make that decision to place our faith in the instruction of the spiritual master and then execute, act on it. And then Krishna is there. He's a super soul. He's within our hearts. He's aware of everything, and he's just watching. And when he's pleased, you know, when he feels like, okay, good for you, I'm pleased. You've done it. When, you know, and he's satisfied that, yeah, you've actually, that we've understood, that we've really done it. Then Krishna reciprocates. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that famous verse: "Tesham evana kampartam aham agyana jam tamaha." Nasyami Amabhavishto, Gyana Dapena Bhashvatada. Krishna says, I who am dwelling within their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So, you know, actually the verse before that goes, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love. You see? That's just another way of saying, to those who make that decision to place their faith in the instruction of the spiritual master and live it, act upon it, live it, make it your life and soul. And Krishna says, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. And then the next thing is he says, I destroy the shining lamp of knowledge, the darkness born of ignorance. See? So that's, you know, that's how we advance individually. That's how the movement will progress, you know, on a whole. Just this one thing, you know, making that choice, making that decision to try to put our, you know, place our faith in the instruction of the spiritual master and follow it and just keep it there. Do it, put it there and keep it there and just do it. And just be patient, you know, just like Rupa Goswami says, you know, enthusiasm, patience, determination, and then eventually everything will work out auspicious. Okay, I'll stop there. Anybody have any questions? Yeah, it's not true, no.
Thank you, Bhrigupati Prabhu. You start your class by mentioning authority. Everything is based on authority. So in the Vedic times, Aryan civilization in those times is easy for them. They're all familiar with dharmic actions, the dharma. So it's more easy, it's more accessible to them. Authority is in their, more or less, it's like a daily affair. And personalities like Srila Prabhupada, of course, you know, they're full of information and this, and they live that, they walk with that understanding. So now in Kali Yuga, as you know, Kalosudra Sambhava, nowadays people, they don't have any faith in authorities. Nobody wants to vote. And when the two candidates from whichever country you can name, they come and stage to play their, you know, to propose their projects, they start bringing up all the dirty laundry, all the bad things of each other, so the public gets completely bewildered. Like in Mexico, I've seen sometimes it's embarrassing. You know, the highest, the top level authority there has been put down like every time. And it's 60 years ago, at least I remember, we used to honor, you know, we were very happy and proud to know who's your president, or even here. So my question is that, can you name some of the good qualities of those leaders that can bring faith to the public in general outside, the people outside?
I think the most important thing public outside is to get Srila Prabhupada's books. You know, they, it's, I mean, practically speaking, they have so little exposure to devotees, you know, and get, there's so little interaction between the general public and devotees. Really, the books are the thing. That's why Prabhupada said right here in Los Angeles, print as many books and as many languages and distribute, and the Krishna conscious movement will automatically spread, because, you know, he knew the situation. So I think it's super important for people to get Prabhupada's books, and you know, they're, when they read Prabhupada's books, they're associating with a pure devotee, and hopefully they're getting benefit. I mean, we go to the schools and we meet young people all the time. I get about a half a dozen comments a day when I meet kids who've already received the book, and they say, I read that book, it's interesting. Yeah, I like that book, you know. So it's there. I mean, they're not coming to the temple, they're not joining, and they're not even coming to the temple, but, you know, they're reading. You know, there are people we're giving these books to who are reading them and appreciating them. And so I think that's the best, most important thing we could do. I think we just should increase that. Yeah. Of qualities. He wants to know what qualities should, yeah, do people need to see in leaders to reinstill faith. Was that the gist of the question? Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
So there are innumerable qualities, especially we have in the case of King Yudhishthira. You see, why did Krishna even want this big fight, this big battle? And whenever and wherever there's a decline in religious practice and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion. So to annihilate those miscreants, he wanted to put someone in place who would be the very antithesis, the very opposite of what they were promoting. They were demoniac coming in the form of kings. And Yudhishthira was not demoniac. He was godly. He was asura, basically. Mm-hmm. And the qualities that he was showing were the qualities of faith, the qualities of hope, the qualities of love, the qualities of obedience that you've been talking about, qualities of courage, qualities of humility. When he would see Krishna, although he was king and although he was older, he still offered his obeisances. Of course, Krishna seemed a little embarrassed by that, because the etiquette is that the older person is given the obeisances. And Krishna showed him complete respect, not expecting Yudhishthira to bow down to him. But Yudhishthira knew he was the Lord, so therefore he gave him that type of respect. Other qualities there, detachment that the Yudhishthira had. He had discrimination. He could tell what should be done and what should not be done. And when one knows that, one detaches himself from those things which are evil, which are wrong, which promote bad society, and he attaches himself to those qualities that promote the society, that give, that make it blossom, that help people develop those virtues that I just mentioned a few moments ago. But the chief virtue that Yudhishthira was famous for is that he not only venerated and glorified and honored Krishna, but he encouraged that in his subjects. He set the perfect example. Whatever a great man does, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, the whole world follows that. So that's the main point, is that when you have a leader who is demoniac, then everybody else becomes demoniac. When you have a leader who is virtuous and who's God-realized and who is encouraging everyone else to be that way, then the whole society becomes enlightened. We have this in the case of Lord Ramachandra. It is mentioned in the Ramayana that as a result of the wonderful character of Lord Ramachandra and the following of his subjects, that there would be no earthquakes, there were no hurricanes, what we call natural, which really unnatural, but they call them natural calamities, natural catastrophes. During the time of Lord Ramachandra, there were no such things, because of the fact everybody acted in complete sync with the higher knowledge, higher laws, and being in completely in sync and wanting to please the king, and wanting to please their father, wanting to please authorities, as you were mentioning. So when we get into that, and of course what we're trying to please them with is to try our best to obey those things which have been set down in Vedic culture, so that Vedic culture really spreads and doesn't contract and then disappear.
Thank you. Excellent answer. One thing, last thing I wanted to throw in here, just so everybody didn't get the feeling that I'm kind of like suggesting that we're not already placing faith in the instruction of the spiritual master and taking shelter. Actually, we are. And I heard something interesting from Suvas Prabhu. He rarely gives class, so I'll mention it. That all the members of the TOVP team came forward unsolicited. They approached him and complimented him on how enthusiastic and how really what a nice spiritual atmosphere they felt they, you know, existed here. Correct? Ambarish, Radhajivan, all the different members, you know, individually came up to him and said, "Wow, it's really, you know, it's really fired up here." Because they were watching everybody chanting and dancing in the kirtans, and they saw, like, you know, good attendance to the programs, and they were favorably impressed. They liked what they experienced here. So, you know, we're doing something right. If I gave the impression that, you know, we're all, no, and we're worthless, we didn't know. No, we're doing, already we're doing a lot right, and just have to keep doing it, you know. 5 seconds before Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, it was right there on the ground, you know. In other words, Krishna's, you could do anything, and we just have to, you know, keep faith and Prabhupada's instructions and all the, you know, things that are predicted that would happen, the wonderful way the Krishna conscious movement will spread and everything like that. That could happen. I mean, we're on target. We just have to keep up with what we're doing. Anybody else? Foster Roo? His hands up, the microphone.
I was listening to a lecture by Srila Prabhupada, and he said that in Krishna consciousness, that the devotee should become a Mahatma. And Prabhupada gave a wonderful description of Mahatma. He said that a Mahatma is one who actually does his prescribed duty. He doesn't become negligent. He takes care of his family. He takes care of his wife. He does his business. But he does everything also for Krishna. This is the difference, doing it for Krishna. And Prabhupada said, this is a Mahatma. It doesn't matter if you're a householder, a sannyasi, whatever you are. It doesn't matter. And we see that in Krishna consciousness, if you just stay long enough and you chant the holy name, and you just serve Krishna, you'll become a Mahatma. You'll actually develop an attachment for Krishna. And just like the battlefield Kurukshetra, you know, Krishna was telling Arjuna that, I'm going to tell you about myself, and I'm going to empower you, because there's two things. First is that you are my friend, and second is that you're my devotee. And so from that, Krishna empowered Arjuna to be able to defeat the Kurus in the battle of Kurukshetra. So for us, we're battling Maya. So if we just try to make an endeavor to become a devotee of Krishna, and you try to just become a friend of Krishna, one can become empowered to do most amazing things, and automatically one will become a leader in the world. And we can see that Srila Prabhupada was in that position. He was a dear friend of Lord Krishna, and also at the same time he was a great devotee, and the accomplishments that he made were inconceivable. So really sometimes we wonder, well, characteristic, this, that, and everything else. Just try to do those two things in one's life, automatically you'll become the greatest of devotees.
Oh, Prabhu, Prabhu, I'd like to say something.
So I think it can very nice what all what has been said. And it can be summarized, the rule of the thumb regarding these qualities that are being asked about is exemplified by Srila Prabhupada himself and what he said about his qualities, about himself, and how he said that he was respected. We all remember, actually I ask you, why did what did he say? I'm sure you know. Why was he respected? Because of what? You remember? Because he, what's the jargon, walked the talk, because he, whatever, he was living just as he was preaching, whatever he was preaching, which is the example should be given by an acharya. So the qualities of a leader, of course, depending on what he's preaching, because, you know, all the leaders are preaching something. But generally, The point is that they're preaching something good, something elevated, and then it is found out that they're not following. So that was, you know, what I may call the rule of the thumb regarding what are the qualities we should be manifesting. And on the other hand, we should remember, this is a very important point being brought about by Satchitananda Prabhu for our movement, because also Srila Prabhupada has said how the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement, one of them, but I mean so many times he said the purpose is to create men of character, men of good character. So we do have a duty in creating those people that, you know, those men, those women that will be exemplary in the world and that could attract the respect of the people as authority.
Thank you. Excellent addition. So thank you very much. Kuntarachima Bhagavatam Kijai, Srila Prabhupada Kijai.